Greetings and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shurim and Daf Yomi. My name is Yitzchak Yatshalom. We're now on Masechet Bava Metzia, Daf Samach Tet Amud Bet. About to look at the fifth Mishnah of this, the fifth Perek, Ezehu Neshech, continuing with the issue of Machtzit Sachar, which we dealt with in the last Mishnah, which is the investment scheme. Shamim Parah V'Chamor. Here we are allowed to assess or the appraise the value of an ox or of a cow or of a donkey. Anything that produces and eats, meaning that it's going to do work and that work will produce enough or even more than the worker who's getting the investment needs in order to feed them and take care of them. There you could do a 50-50 profit sharing. In those places where the minig is that if the animal then gives birth, they immediately split the animals that are born. Then you do so. And as we saw this referenced in the last shiur, in places where the minig is to raise them, then the person who is taking care of them has to raise them. How long? That we saw shiurim. So we saw that you can assess the calf with its mother or the young donkey with its mother, and we saw what that meant as far as not going to pay for the movement, for the schlepping of the thing, as it were. Mafriz al sadehu. Mafriz al sadehu seems to mean that you arbitrarily and artificially raise the value of the field. We'll see what that means in the Gemara. Ve'eno choshesh mishum ribit. In all of these cases, there is no concern about ribit. In the first set of cases, it's because the animal is producing, and therefore the worker is getting from the animal enough to pay for the actual work of it. And so there's no, it doesn't look like a loan at all. Tanu Rabbanan. Mafrizal Sadeo Ve'eno Choshesh Mishum Ribit Ketzad. So we're now going to get an explication on the last line of the Mishnah. Hasocher et ha-sadeh mi-chaviro ba-sara kurim chitin l'shana. So a guy rents a field, and the rent is 10 kur of wheat, let's say, for the year. Ve'omerlo, tein li matayim zuz va-farnasena. And now the renter says to the owner, lend me 200 zuz, or give me 200 zuz, and I will put it into the field to improve the field. And then I will pay you 12 instead of 10 for the year. Mutar. That is a permissible deal. You cannot do that with a store or with a boat. You could do that with a field where you could take the money and immediately put it in, because what the improvement in the field therefore creates a greater yield that you can put into the rental payment. And it's not ribit. However, that doesn't work with a chanut svina. I'm rachmar avua pamim shafriz al chanut latzur batzura svina lasot la iskaria. And Rav Nachman quotes his Rebbe as saying, you know what, you could even do that with a store or with a boat, with a store, for instance, to paint something on the wall, or a boat to get a better mast. Chanu latzur batzura tadetzavu ba'inshi, the kind of thing that people paint. Vahave agra tvei, it makes the store more attractive and people will come. And since with the boat, since it has a better mast, therefore it will fetch more at rental, and therefore this is not considered ribit. Now, sfinta, let's talk about a boat and renting a boat. Amarav, agra ufagra. Agra means that the renter pays a fee for renting. He also has to pay for the boat if it gets destroyed. Now, Amr le Rav Kahana Ravasi le Rav. So two of Rav's students said to him, I agra lo fagra, I pagra lo agra. It's got to be one or the other. In other words, their notion is either you are renting the boat, in which case you pay for rental, but that's it, or it's like a loan, in which case you're paying for the damage, you're going to have to pay it back. In which case, agra becomes ribit. Shatik Rav. Rav had no answer. It sounds like he was defeated. I'm Rav Sheshet, my Tama Shatik Rav. So Rav Sheshet heard this story. He said, why didn't Rav have an answer? Lo Shmiel Ehad Etanya. Didn't he know this bright? Tafapisha Amru Ein Mekablin Son Barzel Mi Yisrael. Even though, as we'll see later in the Mishnah, even though you're not allowed to accept Son Barzel from a Jew, which means to accept goods of any sort, were you the recipient, are responsible for making them whole, so that if they get lost or destroyed or depreciated, you have to make that difference up. Mekablin tzon barzel min anochim. You could do that with non-Jews. Aval amru. Hasham paro l'chavero v'mar lo. Harei paratcha suya alai b'shtoshim dinar. V'anei l'chasela b'chodesh. But if a guy, let's say, appraises a cow and says, we're going to set the value of the cow at 30 dinar, and I'm going to pay you one sella per month, mutar. In other words, that's agra upagra. I'm paying you rental for the cow, plus we're setting an appraised amount. And so it sounds like the reason for the appraised amount is, if the cow dies, how much I owe you? So it's agra upagra. So why didn't Rav answer that? And the reason that that's okay is levi shelo asa adamim. You didn't turn the animal into money, you just appraised the value. V'lo asa'a, what do you mean? You didn't make it value. You said 30 dinar. So Rav Sheshet, he explains, lo asa adamim michayim el achamita. Meaning, you didn't set a value of the animal while it was alive, you just said, if it dies, that's its value. Which means, one or the other, but not both. So therefore, if the animal's fine, you're going to pay the sachar for it. And then at some point that the animal dies, we got a new feature coming in, but there's no rebate. So why didn't Rav answer that? Rav Papa, hilchata sfina agro fagra. Rav Papa said, indeed, the halacha is like Rav originally said, which is that you both pay rental and you have to assess the value of the boat. And if the boat breaks and destroyed, you have to pay for the full thing. The renter has to pay for the full thing. V'nagu b'nei chufra. These are people who are boatmen. Agra b'shat mishicha, that they assess the rental at the point that the renter takes possession. Pagra b'shat shvira, they only assess the damages as per the moment that it gets destroyed. So for instance, if the value of boats goes down in the meantime, or the value of boats goes up in the meantime, or this particular boat depreciated or appreciated because he put something into it, it would be the value as per that moment, not at the moment that he took the rental. Do we care that these boatmen do it that way? Since when does that establish halacha? The answer is mishum devanita tanya minhaga, because we have it in a brayta that way. Therefore, it is a valid minhag. Come on, Rav Shmuel. New piece. Ma'ot shel yitomim mutar lahavotan b'ribit. Sounds like a shattering statement, an amazing statement, that we are allowed to take the money of an estate that's owned now by minor heirs, so we are acting as the trustee, and we're allowed to lend it out for ribit. I'm aware of Nachman, so Nachman turns to Rabbanan, and he says, Mishum diat mininu safina lahu isur, just because they're yatomim, we're going to give them an isur, we're going to stuff an isur down their throat, literally. In other words, we're going to take their money, and then their estate is going to grow with this isur of ribit, and we're going to give it to them. So he curses them. He says, Yatmi da achli lav didhu, these yitomim who eat that which is not theirs, meaning the ribit, leiz lubata shivkayu, they should follow their bequeather. In other words, he's cursing, they should die. Now he's not cursing any particular yitomim, he's just saying the statement doesn't make any sense. So amar le, emali izu gufa du'uvda hechiave. So he said to Rav Anan, please tell me what the actual story is where you got the idea that Shmuel would say this, because I don't think Shmuel ever said it. So you must have inferred it from a story. Amar le, so Rav Anan said to Rav Nachman, Hahu duda divne mar ukva, tavi beimar Shmuel takil v'yahiv le. There was a pot that belonged to the sons of Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva died, and Shmuel was taking care of the estate. And they had a particular pot, and Shmuel would rent it out. He would weigh it and rent it out. Takil v'shakil, and then he'd weigh it and give it. Shakil agar v'shakil pachta. So he would take a rental fee, which of course would go to their account, and he would also take the depreciation. So each time that he rented it, he weighed it out. When he got it back, he weighed it out. And because it was of bronze, the metals would dissipate a little bit and become worth less. Now, I agra lo pachta, mi pachta lo agra. And basically it should be either that the thing is a straight-up rental, so they just pay the rental fee, or else it's like a loan, in which case they can pay for the damages, but not the rental fee. In other words, that's a rebit. So Rav Nachman said to Rav Anan, said, you could even do that with the guy himself who did it, not just the heirs. The Makabli Alay Chuscha Denachasha, anybody who rents something accepts that they're going to pay for the bit of metal that gets depreciated, that they're going to pay for it. We understand that as the metal gets weaker and weaker, the value of the thing gets less. But that's not agra and pagra. So Amrav Shila, but that also doesn't mean that you're allowed to charge rebate. So the fact that Shmuel was doing that with Yatomim's property doesn't mean that you're allowed to charge rebate with their money. Rav Shila, Rav Chista, Amilam, Rav Yosef, Rav Chama, Rav Sheshet. Ma'oshet Tumim Mutal Botan Karov L'Sachar Rachok L'Hefseid. So now we're getting close to it where we do say that you're allowed to take the funds of Yotam, which we're always concerned with maintaining them and actually increasing them if possible. You're allowed to lend them out in a situation where the likelihood that they will profit from the investment is greater, and if there's Hefseid, it will go to the other side, because that's Avak Ribit. And Avak Ribit is the Rabbanan, and we do not make that Gezerah, that Takana, against Yotomim, only against the person himself, the adult himself, whose money it is. Atan Rabbanan. Now we'll see more about this. Karov the Sachav Rachok Lefseid Rasha. Normally, if a guy lends money in an investment scheme where the likelihood of him profiting is great and of him losing is low relative to the other guy, he's a Rasha. Savak Ribit. Karov Lefseid Rachok Lesachar Chasid. The opposite, he's a great guy. If it's an even Stephen piece, that's midat kol adam. That's a normal way to do it. So Rabbi asked Rav Yosef a very practical question. What do we do with the money of heirs who are minors, and we're in charge of it? What do we do with it? So I'll tell you what we do. We keep it in the Beit Din. We give them a zuz at a time, meaning for allowance, for money, clothing, whatever they need. Now, if that's the case, then the capital disappears. You're not investing in it at all. So he said to Rav Yosef, what do you do? We try to look around, and we try to find somebody who has gold flakes, meaning gold that's not turned into either coins or jewelry. And what we do is we take their money and we buy gold with it. Then we give it back to the owner in an investment in which the Yotomim are likely to gain, right? But we only do it with gold flakes or gold shavings, not with like a gold piece of jewelry. Why? Because then the owner is going to look at it as a pikadon. The guy with the gold is going to look at it as a pikadon. And the kids don't know what's going on. He's going to come and say, oh, there's my jewelry. There are my gold coins. And he'll take it from them and all will be lost. And this is how we invest for them. So Amar Ravashi, Tenach imishtakach gavadi le'dava pricha. Ravashi said, three generations later, that's fine if you can find a guy with that kind of gold. But if not, are we going to just let their funds disappear? So by the time they're of age, they could be broke. It's our job to take care of them. We find a guy whose property is quiet, meaning there's no lawsuits or claims against his property. He's a trustworthy guy. He's obedient to the Torah. And he's never under the cheirim of the Rabbanan, which means he's obedient to the Beit Din also. We give him the money in the Beit Din, and that's exactly what we call a trustee over an account. It's his job to invest it like he would invest his own money, and hopefully grow their account up. Okay, next Mishnah. In Mekabelin Tzon Barzel Miyisrael. We saw this a minute ago. You're not allowed to accept a Tzon Barzel deal. Israel, which of course means that you're accepting any sort of item. Tzon is an example of animals, of a flock, where the fellow getting it has full responsibility for any losses that take place, and yet he's going to return the investment as is made sure repeat. That's a repeat case. You can have such a deal with non-Jews. And now, further on the issue of non-Jews, v'lovin mehen umalvin otan beribit. You can borrow from them and lend to them beribit. V'chein beger toshav. By the way, the same thing applies to a ger toshav. Ger toshav, short version, is a non-Jew living in Israel who accepts under the auspices of the Beit Din to abide by the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach, but also abide by the Jewish law of the court and be subservient to the court. In that case, he has special laws, and we have some responsibility to take care of him if he's in trouble, but we're still allowed to lend him beribit. It only applies to Jews. The prohibition. It's an interesting case. A Jew is allowed to lend the non-Jews money beribit, with the consent of the Nochri, but not with the consent of the Israel. What's that talking about? We'll clarify. So let's start with the issue of Tzon Barzel. So you think that Tzon Barzel is in the domain of the fellow who received it, and that's the Ribit problem? If you get Tzon Barzel from Nochrim, means the Goy gave me some animals, and I have to take care of the animals, and if the animals, I have to return that same value to him, and if the animals appreciate, so I gain. If they go down, then I lose, and if they die, I have to make it up. Vladop Turim and Abachora. The halacha is that if they give birth while in my reshut, I don't have to give the bechor to the kohen. And by the way, that means that they're bereshut hanotein, meaning they still belong to the goyim. They don't belong to me. So Rabbi Elokasha, Hana Mekabalei Unsa Vezola, Hana Lo Mekabalei Unsa Vezola. So Rabbi gives the following answer. He says, if the fellow who accepts Tzon Barzel says, I will accept any onus that happens to the animal, and I'll accept any depreciation in the value, and I'll still make up the value, then they really do belong to him. And in that case, by the way, you would be Chayiv and Bechora. But if you don't accept that, you're just accepting the animal and you'll take care of it, but if it goes up or down, that's going to be on the wallet of the giver, if it goes down. So I'm really Rabbi, the Kabbalah Mara Unsevazola, Tzon Barzel Karidle. If the original owner says, I'll take Unsevazula, that's not Tzon Barzel. The order of Tani Sefer, actually read what I said, Rabbi's answer backwards, same thing though. That if the owner accepts Unsu Vizula, then it's really in his property, and therefore there'd be no Bechora, right? So Rava says, are you calling that Tzon Barzel? That's not what Tzon Barzel is. Tzon Barzel means that the fellow who got the animals is fully responsible, and if it depreciates or it's stolen or destroyed, he has to make it up. Think of Tzon Barzel in the most common area that we're familiar with, in Ketubah. When a woman brings in property, it's either Tzon Barzel or Malog, and Tzon Barzel is that which the husband commits that he's going to make even Stephen, as opposed to the Malog, im metu metula, im pachtu pachtula. So at the end of our Mishnah, Rava continues to attack Abaye. At the end of our Mishnah, when it said, but you're allowed to accept Tzon Barzel from non-Jews, why didn't it say, and you're allowed to accept from Jews as long as the owner accepted Unsa Vizola? Right? So that can't be it. El Amar Rava, why is it that even though we say that the Tzon Barzel is in the reshut of the recipient, nonetheless, if the giver is a non-Jew, the recipient and then the animal under the domain of the Jewish recipient gives birth, the Jew doesn't have to be Bechora. We're talking about a case, Tzon Barzel, where the owner did not accept responsibility for depreciation or loss. There's a special, unique halacha about Bechorot, which is, let's say that at the end of the road, the Jew doesn't give the money back. The goy will come and claim his animal. And what happens if the animal's gone? He'll go grab the babies. It's the goy, they belong to the goy. Which means that there is the potential ownership of the non-Jew in this animal. And in such a case, there is no obligation of Bechora, and therefore, that's why you're Patur. So it's a unique Bechor halacha, but nonetheless, Tzon Barzel really is in the domain of the recipient who's working with the animals. Okay, now we have a pasuk in Mishlei. Marbeho no b'neshech v'tarbit, l'chonen dalim yikpitzenu. Odd pasuk. Somebody who increases his fortune by usury will end up gathering it for someone who gives money to the poor. What's that talking about? My lechonen dalim, amrav kagon shavar malka. So he says, it's like our king, and they really held the king in high esteem, and they liked him, the Sasanian king Shapur, because what would happen is if somebody would lend in usury, they'd end up having a big tax to pay. The tax would come to the king, and the king would then give it out as tzedakah to the poor. So Rav Nachman says, this pasuk is even talking about when you take usury from a non-Jew. Rav challenged him, the Torah says you're allowed to lend money to a non-Jew. So why would that be a bad thing where your money is eventually going to be taken from you? So my tashich, lav tishoch, doesn't tashich mean that you're allowed to lend it to him? Lo tashich, it means you are allowed to pay an ochri with the rebate, but not to take from him. So lo sagin lav achi, you're not allowed to do both ways. Afuki achicha dulo. It says, as opposed to your brother, you're not allowed to go in any either direction. What do you mean? It says about a Jew explicitly, l'achicha lo tashich. So why do you need l'anochri tashich u'l'achicha lo tashich if it's only to say that you may not give ribi to a non-Jew, but you may give ribi to a non-Jew, but not to a Jew, if it's for that. So the answer is l'avor alav b'yaseh v'lo taseh. That means you violated the aseh of l'anochri tashich plus the lo taseh l'achicha lo tashich when you give it to a Jew. So eitav elovin menu alvin otam b'ribit. But our Mishnah says explicitly differently that you can lend and borrow b'ribit to a non-Jew. L'chein b'ger toshav. L'chia b'reid ravuna lo nitzvacha ela b'chtei chayav. Said, okay, when the Mishnah allows you to lend money beribit, that's only for you to make a living, not to make a profit. If you need to make a living, so you can lend money beribit to a non-Jew. Interesting take. Ravina marahacha b'tamin chacham maskinan. Said, what we're talking about, our Mishnah is talking about tamin chachamim. Tam, amai gazra rabban and wide, the rabbis make a rule, listen to this, that you should not, lend money beribit to a non-Jew. Shema yibom masav. Because maybe the fact that you have constant business interaction with the non-Jew, you're going to learn from his behavior. But how? But since this guy is a Talmid Chacham, he won't learn from the non-Jew's business ethics or so. And as a result of that, the Talmid Chacham is allowed to lend him a rebate, which means we see a fundamental problem with lending a rebate even to a non-Jew. And there's an exception in the case of somebody who's not going to be influenced by his behavior. So, ikadamali lahadu ravuna aha. Some people learned this comment to ravuna on the following statement. Tan Rav Yosef, im kesef tavet avet ani imach. Very famous pasuk in Parshat Mishpatim. That if you're going to lend money, when you lend money to my nation, God says, you lend it to the poor man who's with you. What does that mean? Ami v'nochri, ami kodem. So if you have your priorities in staka, right, and lending money is a form of staka, in a sense, that when you have a choice between a Jew and a non-Jew, God says, my nation comes first. Ani v'asher ani kodem. There's two Jews who want to borrow money from you. One's poor, one's rich. The poor man comes first. Ani yacha v'ani ircha, ani yacha kodmin. If there's poor in your family and poor of your city, your poor come first. If it's your city and another city, so there is a telescoping range of priorities that starts with the Jew and the poor Jews in your family and the poor Jews in your city and outward. An interesting question came up in the 19th century, the famous Chatam Sofer piece about Aniyei Eretz Yisrael. Amar amiv enochri amikodem. So we said pshita. It should be obvious that you lend to the Jew first. It's talking about a case where you have a chance to lend to the non-Jew beribit, or to the Jew, obviously without rebit, it still goes to the Jew. Tanya Amar Rabbi Yossi. And now a little bit of Agadah relating to the issue of rebit. Bo re samyut inehem shel mave rebit. Look how blind these guys are who lend rebit. Adam kore l'chavero rasha. If a guy calls another guy Rasha, you already molachayav, he's destroying his livelihood. And what happens? They bring edim and a sofer and a scribe and everything else and a quill and ink. And they write, this fellow has denied his portion with God. That's what writing a shtar with ribit is. You write a shtar and say, I'm lending you $1,000 and you owe me $1,200 or you owe me 18% compound interest. You're essentially saying, I'm denying God. So look at that. You're getting maybe a little bit of ribit, and look what you're doing. Look how blind you must be. Tanya, Rishimon Elazar Omer, Mi kol mi sheyesh lo ma'od malveh otam shelo b'ribit. If a guy has money and obviously has a chance to lend them ribit and doesn't, you look at Tehillim Tetvav, which in the Gemara at the end of Makot says is the distillation of the great principles of the Torah into 11 principles. The last two are that a fellow who does not lend b'neshech and does not take bribery against an innocent person are people who will last forever. Great praise for somebody who doesn't lend b'ribit. What do you learn from there? That if somebody does lend ribit, then his stuff doesn't last forever. His estate falls. We see people who don't lend ribit and they also have financial ruin. These guys have financial ruin, but they come back. The guys who lend ribit, it falls and they never come back. And now, slightly as a tangent to that, we see this drasha. Tanya, the pasuk in Chavakuk, lama tabit bogdim tacharish bevela rashat tzadik kevela rashat tzadik menu. Why are you looking, O rebels, being silent when the rasha is swallowing up the one who is tzadik mimenu? Alright, so simply in the reading of the Tanakh, that would mean somebody who's more innocent than he. But the meaning, as Chazal often do, to take the meaning of a pasuk in Tanakh and read it with rabbinic understanding of the word, tzaddik here being righteous, means tzaddik mimenu, a rasha could destroy somebody who's only greater than he is. But a tzaddik kamur, he really would never be able to destroy. Okay, we'll pause at this point and pick it up in the next podcast as we continue with our study of Perek Ezo Neshech. In the meantime, everybody should have a wonderful day.